David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 412. I'm your host, Steve Raker, who this week realizes the folly of making the comic book bunker an entryway into the subterranean domain of the Moloids. Between them, the Deviants, the Lava Men, and Tyrannus' kingdom, I can barely get any reading done around here. I need to say goodbye to my Moloid friends, leave them with our secret handshake, and bolt a blast door over this hole. Marvel Noise is a podcast sponsored by nobody, for the fans, by the fans, with a scope of anything Marvel-related that we're reading or watching or playing with. Our hosts, the Deliberate Noise Network, has other fine podcasts on its roster, including Indie Comic Book Noise, where Andrew, Kevin, Phil, sometimes joined by me, talk up the indie books we're digging. You can also stream or download new and old episodes of Marvel Noise over on our website, marvelnoise.com, and give us feedback and get new episode announcements on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Later this episode, Andrew and Kevin bring us closer to the New Warriors finish line, but first, comic book podcast confession. I haven't read anything recent or... enough Submariner comics to offer anything up for this opener. So at the 11th hour, I challenged WWX Kevin and Andrew the LA Rabbit to come up with a couple of done-in-one issues to share. I figured that should be easy enough between regular issues, inventory stories, fill-ins, annuals, one-shots, what-ifs, specials, and the like. So we get Andrew and Kevin on early. And that's a win-win in my four-color funny book.
I had to take the challenge seriously, though. Because I said, I don't want to pick something, read it, then say, oh, that wasn't good enough, and then pick something else. So I'm just like, if I pick something, that's just what it's got to be. And if it doesn't work out, like, it doesn't work out.
Inventories. I'm not sure that's a... Is that still a thing, Steve? Are they still rolling out inventory stories?
No, but if you went back to try to find a done-in-one, an inventory story would be a sure bet, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Who doesn't like some timeless classic that was stuffed away in a closet?
And isn't that how you make it a classic? You don't make a reference to anything in pop culture.
And who knows if this is fun enough to have this random selection of stories. We've created a new segment here. Otherwise, this too will be a done-in-one.
Yeah.
All right, Kevin.
That's appropriate.
What do you got?
Well, I mean, it was Thanos.
Uh-huh. I'm listening.
So I'm like, I mean, I'm sure someone will have some input. And I'm like, it was the most recent done-in-one that I hadn't read. I figured I should read. So this is Thanos Death Notes.
Hmm.
And I looked at the creative team. It's like the current Thor creative team. And you have Christopher Cantwell, Straczynski, Kyle Starks. I'm like, that's interesting. DeVito, Foreman, Shaw, Lim. I'm like, this sounds good. I think that sounded better than it actually is, though. I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing. I'm thinking, is this a one shot? I mean, it does have a framing sequence. Because you remember at the beginning of Kate's Thor run, like, he had that whole thing with Thanos. This probably tells you I'm behind on Thor, because it says like at the end of this, check out Thor 29, which I haven't read yet. So I mean, I'm behind, but the framing sequence is Thor checking in on Thanos stuff because of that whole thing at the beginning where he was like had the Infinity Gauntlet with the weird stone on it and everything.
Yeah, he had a vision of Thanos leading the zombies, like an army of zombies holding the Infinity Gauntlet.
So then you get into that the first is like the after the framing sequence is the Cantwell thing. And it's just a bizarre story about that Thanos, I guess like his first appearance where he looks weird. And they're like, oh, it's a robot. And like Tony's trying to figure out that weird off model Thanos.
So that's why he looked like Metron.
Yes. and then they get into this whole thing where it's just like, oh yeah, where he starts trying to psych him out about all this stuff. And he's like, oh yeah, I've already won in the future. So that means I've won now. How do you know that everything I ever did isn't what you're supposed to be doing? And now you have to live with this thought for the rest of your life. And I'm just like, what? I'm just like, oh, okay. And then unexpectedly, they have a Thanos love story.
Hmm.
And I'm like, this must be new.
Is it the skeleton death lady?
Yeah, she's here, but it's actually her asking him about another one of his loves when he was younger. So it's basically, it's not kid Thanos, but it's like if they had a book and it was like teenage Thanos, you know, it'd be like, oh, it's too expensive to do adult Thanos. So
it's Thanos in Riverdale, basically?
Yeah. So that's also very strange. And I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this, right?
You find out that his chin is acne scars. Is that why it's all orange like that?
Yes. Because he's like, people aren't like exactly, I mean, I wouldn't say it's abnormally not nice to him. Like it's basically like teen life. Like some people are just going to be like not nice to you type of thing in society stuff.
Yeah, suck it up, Thanos. Like,
no, and then he's like, oh, and then I fell in love and I have hope now. And I'm just like, that is a pretty weird idea for a Thanos story.
Yeah, that's going to end bad.
And then they have one where it's like Infinity Gauntlet time where he just like murders a bunch of people.
Mm.
So ultimately kind of inconsequential.
Yes. That's how I feel.
But yeah, I was just like,
but it was little Thanos.
But that's the classic. The classic one and done is generally, you know, they're not usually shifting a big status quo, or that's just a fun story or stories.
Yep.
Like, you know, that's I think it'd be hard if Steve was like, you have to find one and dones that are massive shifts in the status quo. That definitely would be a bigger ask.
All right, Andrew, you got the mic.
All right. I just grabbed, I hope this is, I'm not sure if this counts.
Oh boy. Come on.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I gave you such a broad scope.
I had Women of Marvel number one because it's an anthology.
Sure.
And so if there is another one, and maybe there is already, depending on when this airs, I don't know, maybe this will be an inventory. Steve will stick it in the closet for 3 years.
Yeah. If there's another one, it too will be a done in one.
Yeah. So the framing device is Jennifer Walters in court sort of introducing each segment. But what I like is it's pretty short. And they just make a bunch of jokes. It's like Silly Court, which is the only type I want in my comics. I don't like when they try and pretend like it's a proper court or like it just doesn't fit. The yes. Marvel
you
comics
like Charles Soule Daredevil isn't your thing.
Yeah, it's just Marvel comics is too far from the real world that it would never. When they try and make it real, you'd be like, none of this would really work. So I always appreciated when they're just like, it's still a silly comic and we're going to have fun with that part of it. And you can tell emotional stories and everything. Just don't try and pretend that this is lifted from the court transcripts of anyone. So you get some fun team ups in the little short stories. So you have Black Cat and Silk taking on Mysterio. They were out each doing private karaoke rooms, and Mysterio didn't like overhearing their singing, so he foolishly attacks them, and they punish him by making him listen to their not great singing. And no one's going to possibly do this because it's a $6 comic, but in the middle they have a Wasp paper doll with different outfits, and I just don't think people buying this are going to cut up their comic book. God bless anyone that does. That's the point of these things, right? Or maybe you just photocopy it and then cut them out, right? Or do you think people would take a knife, like a pair of scissors?
It's enough. Like to, it's enough.
1965.
Yeah, and I think it's just nostalgic enough to see the setup. You know what the deal is.
And then Hawkeye and Chavez hang out for a girls' night that leads to criminal events. And it's kind of funny slotted in roughly into continuity because she talks about having trouble with her powers but not telling the Thunderbolts team.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, that's kind of roughly giving you a time frame of sorts. And there's a joke because they're freeing a character named Starling, but it's not the Starling she's looking for. And they talk, and it's funny because Hawkeye's there and she's like, oh, I have the same problem. You know, the confusion between there's only so many names and the, although that was a funny, I mean, not rolling on the sidewalk, but a funny comment to make. And then the last one is Photon and Miss Marvel, which is good because she's kind of very hero worshipy of classical superheroes. And I like that Photon's come back. I haven't been thrilled with some of the outfit designs for her. You know, I like the classic, but I do like that she's come back and is treated like the legacy character she is. You know, they could have done it the other way because of the movies and everything and pretended that she was a newer character. But I really like the placement of her as this classic hero. And then the other attorney gets sassy. And so Jen Walters has to She-Hulk out at the end. And they also, this also is a throwback because it's chock full of like Marvel self-promotion. You know, where they interview the dip. It just, we read a lot of old comics, folks. And if you read those old comics, there is tons of Marvel celebrating Marvel jammed in. So I like things like Meet the Stormbreakers and it's an interview, or like, we're going to talk to this person that works here and talk about how awesome Marvel is all the time and all that. And it is silly in one way, but for me, it's a big nostalgia. And I think we've talked about this before. They've kind of abandoned having a single mouthpiece like Stan for more just kind of general cheerleaderism. And I don't know. I get why you don't want to give one person that much power, but I think it works better when it's funneled through one person, even if they're just, you know, writing Stan's soapbox for a year's worth in an afternoon or whatever, and they just dole them out however, whatever, regardless of the sincerity. It felt better having a figurehead.
I've seen some of those Stormbreaker things in other books as well.
Yeah, but this is all chock full. Like, that was just one, you know, it's the interview behind the scenes, an interview with that and this, and it just feels very good old-fashioned Marvel boosterism. But like I said, my issue is without the single focus of a person, it does feel a little weirdly disembodied.
Last time they did something like that was maybe that, like the Cup of Joe or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel that was a good, and not that Axel's people don't corner. Have problems, but I don't know. And I get why you don't want to give up power, but I'd like to see a return to some sort of fake figurehead, or they can also do like a fake character. Like
Irving Forbush.
DC used to do, you know, or
Irving Forbush.
Yeah. Our man at Marvel. You remember that?
I mean, oh, the Cool-O-Meter.
Yes.
Because, you know, Uncle Creepy and all that. It doesn't have to be Alfred E. Newman. There's plenty of corporate spokespersons to run stuff through.
All right. I got a great done in one. It's on the Unlimited. One. Yep. And it's from December 1969. And because it's on the Unlimited, feel free to check it out. Even though I'm got some points to share with you, there's in no way am I covering what is really most enjoyable about this book, which is the art. And this is Captain America number 122, written by Stan, with art by Gene Colan and Joe Sinnott, including a Colan-Sinnott cover. This issue is The Sting of the Scorpion. Cap goes up against Spidey's villain, the Scorpion, for the first time, and the cover has the Scorpion whipping his tail at Cap, and Cap's blocking it with his shield, and it's making enough sparks, the point of contact, that it's making shadows on the ground because they're fighting at night. It's a great cover.
Yeah, I like seeing the Spider-Man villain in here.
I also enjoyed the super crazy amount of detail they put into the brick building in the background.
Yeah, like, that's your Joe Sinnott.
Someone was spending some time like, I want to do every brick on the face of this building.
That's our man Joe. So in this issue, Cap's like in a real funk. It's shown brilliantly with Cap's reflection on parked cars as he's walking by down the street. He's like, you know, how can he fulfill his duties as Captain America and still have a life as Steve Rogers? And how can he be the symbol of a country that many feel the need to be protesting? How can he just go battle the battle, living in a hotel in between? But the truth is, what he's really bumming about is Sharon Carter. You know, it's always a girl, right? Women. He can't resolve that she's a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. He even dreams of her being shot up on duty by AIM agents and wakes up screaming. He's got it bad, guys.
I had forgotten till you sent us this issue and I pulled it up and I was like, man, I forgot that Cap for huge sections of his runs just mopes around the lot. Yeah. You always think of that for Spider-Man or like romantic troubles of Daredevil or something, but you forget that there's just years of Cap just, oh, I don't fit in, or I'm going to become nomad, or ready for this.
It took him a while to fit in. It took him a while to fit in, you know? I mean, to be real, he's got every right to feel totally alone, you know? Then we get the Scorpion. There's a great cutaway panel of the Scorpion in an alleyway coming out of the shadows. And the text says, but unbeknownst to the departing Steve Rogers, he is soon about to have an encounter that will set him off far more than he expects. And the Scorpion's thinking, I've stayed out of sight for months since my parole, testing my powers, regaining my strength. But now, the time has come for the final test, when I must effortlessly defeat a live victim. Then,
oh no.
Then and only then, well, I know that the Scorpion is ready to assault mankind once more. And his final test? He picks Steve Rogers at random off the street and assaults him. And Cap doesn't know this guy and actually injures his hand punching a wall when the Scorpion dodges. And then the Scorpion whacks Steve unconscious with his tail, but the cops come and chase the Scorpion away. So like Cap is pissed. He's like, you know, in my own country, you know, violated. He dons his uniform and shield and goes off hunting for him. And it's funny too, I was thinking back to those old Avengers issues where they fly coach and stuff. Because when Cap spots him, he has to hail a cab. He's like, follow that vehicle.
Well, so he takes the most circumcircuitous route to get changed into his outfit, where he's like, oh, I got to go back to my hotel room and get. Yep. And I'm like,
it still looks great, though.
Pull your mask over your thing and get to beating up the bad guy, Cap. We don't need this long. And then. It just made his detective work a little more sus that he was able to run the Scorpion down, but it led to a very dramatic fight, which was fun.
Yeah, because, I mean, and the other piece was, I guess, what I'll simply call a Stan Lee coincidence. Cap tussles with the Scorpion, preventing him from performing his mission, which, unbeknownst to Cap, was to take out Agent 13, Sharon Carter, while she was in the field. And she gets captured by the bad guys who hired the Scorpion to take her out anyway. They were a spy ring that Cap also clobbers after he's done with the Scorpion, but never knows that it was Sharon that he saved, and she couldn't call out to him because she was gagged. That was all a fun back and forth. But the rematch with the Scorpion, like you said, Andrew, it's a 4-page epic fight with the Scorpion, like, swinging trees at Cap. But the finishing blow is really just the best. Cap bends back a tree sapling while they're, like, locked in close combat and releases it, twanging the Scorpion like we've all accidentally whacked the person hiking behind us. Like when you bend a branch out of the way on the trail, you know, and then let it go, and you hear the person behind you. But the Scorpion out cold. It's pretty funny. It's a great ish, and the Colin Sinnott team rocks.
I guess in fairness to people that make fun of Rob Liefeld, there is one half page splash where Cap's anatomy gets twisted pretty brutally. Like, it gets extended as he's bending over.
Well, it is colon. Yeah.
But I the other question I had, and I don't know if this is in the letters page, the Donald F. McGregor. We don't think that's Don McGregor, do we?
Yes, we do.
I was curious when people that work in comics ended up writing in comics, and I'm like, boy, that could be Don McGregor.
Or he was already staffing at Marvel.
Yeah.
And was writing, because they pulled in people to this on the other issue that I'm going to talk about. One of the letters is obviously a fake because it's just asking for the artist who started on the book that issue that, hey, it would be great if this artist was on this book. And they're like, hey, cool. Great minds think alike.
Yeah. And I know Mark Evanier has talked about his career as writing fake letters, but Kevin, you will like this because Baron Zemo wrote a letter that was printed in this issue.
Yep. So.
What?
And he lived in Toronto, Canada at the time.
Oh no.
We always knew he was Canadian, dang it.
All right, back to you, Kevin. One more.
All right, it's time to make this into a Thunderbolt segment to cover every appearance that a Thunderbolt, well, the core Thunderbolts, you can decide which ones are core Thunderbolts, has ever made. So we're back to Sucker Fingers Beetle.
Yes.
Classic design.
Bring
classic
it on.
Classic design.
From Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, number 16.
Nice.
Only 35 cents.
I love that series, although it didn't really find its legs for another, probably around like issue 24, 25, right around when the Daredevil stuff. I think that's when it really hit its ground, but.
Yeah. Well, they even mentioned in the letters page that some of the books are like in a bit of a transitional period. And I'm like, yeah, I can see that.
I just love not only the sucker fingers, but it looks like he's wearing like this baggy hazmat suit.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Like, it's always just a great, unique design for the beat. I mean, I had to get upgraded, obviously, because they always upgrade, but I don't know. There's something about the bucket head and the long tube fingers that'll always remain a classic.
I always want to see now every issue how they're going to use these fingers in whatever crime he's trying to do. I'm like, he better do something cool with those fingers. But it's also weird that it's his writer, Elliot Magan. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah. This one feels like it was a fill-in issue because Bill Mantlo was the regular writer on the book already from a few issues prior, and for dozens of issues after. So this one to me felt fill-in. I mean, they even make really vague references to like life events that have happened before and after, and then the editor comes in and like ties them to specific books.
Yeah.
On the splash page, which made it seem like it seems like Nagin was cleverly being vague, like it was a, you know, an inventory story. But it's Sabusema.
I don't even know if this was a regular artistic team either.
It's Sal and Mike Esposito, so can't go wrong.
I mean, this doesn't remind me of... I mean, that is later in this run when Sal is still on the book, but I remember like the early 90s, mid-90s, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he was... There was no regular penciler on this book for a while until... I mean, Jim Mooney did a bit, and then Al Milgrom became the regular... I think it was Mooney and Milgrom, actually, at its best. Through that, you know, the Owl and...
Yeah, Black Cat.
And Black Cat stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so this story of a beetle and story of a cop. It's funny, like we have this sort of like daredevil cop that's like jumping rails and everything with a motorcycle to catch the bad guy.
He's like the Rock of a like he's like a 90s or 2000s, you know, adventure movie cop.
I totally thought it was going to turn out to be some like stunt master or some actual character we knew before from
Crime
like,
Buster.
Yeah, somebody. Yeah. Hell, I only wish. Crime Buster.
I mean, and he's winning acclaim and everything, but like his wife is like, I'm going to leave you. And of course, Jameson here is like, oh man, this guy is just a human. I love this guy. We need more pictures of this guy. We need to feature this guy. And then I'm like, well, you can feature your son or Captain America or something again, I guess. I mean, they're feature people.
How many pieces on the man wolf are they going to run, Kevin? In a world of superheroes, I'm not sure astronauts still rank quite as high on the public interest scale.
My son didn't eat me again this week by J. Jonah Jameson.
Oh boy. Yeah. And I think the beetle comes off in here like he's more of a schemer, a little smarter, because you have this cop like walking into this place and the beetle's like, oh yeah, I have all these big plans, and it seems like he has like he's behind this desk talking, and then he has all this machinery, and he says, oh, I'm going to use all this money, cause all these distractions, all this stuff will be going on, then I can go into the police building and steal this stuff. And I'm like, wow, this seems like a lot of plans here.
I love it. He's like, he's revealed to be the criminal mastermind, crime lord, you know? He's sitting behind a wall of Kirby tech like he's the Phantom of the Opera behind the grand organ. His fingers are doing like multitasking, you know, on all the machinery. Yeah. And he's got a big enough squad that he can send like an army of his goons out there to do his bidding to create a distraction for him. That's awesome.
Yeah, I like how he feels like a real grade Z version of Dr. Octopus or something. This is your budget. If you can't afford Doc Ock, get the Beetle. But yeah, I mean, tech, he's got the powerhouse suit, he's a planner, you know, this is him in his full power.
And I don't know if we see that level of organization again, but maybe I'll find out in the future. But of course, Spidey comes across one of these things that's going on, and then I'm thinking, oh yeah, of course he's busting like through the window and everything, and people are like, you don't want to get glass like in your eye or whatever. And then, you know, the Beetle's going about his business too. And yeah, this time he uses his fingers to go through the wall because he knows there's not that many police officers at this building anymore. So he's just like, oh yeah, I'll just knock a guy out by use my suckers to bring down the wall and attack someone from behind.
Yeah, I don't think that old cop was going to provide much of a fight chance anyway.
He's not just any old cop, though. He's the chief.
He didn't want him to ring the alarm, I'm sure, is what he didn't want. Because, I mean, he goes toe-to-toe with Spider-Man. He's not afraid of running into some poor sap.
But yeah, our featured cop of the story just happens to be there, too. Instead of him being out on the case, they're like, oh, our wives have been talking. So he was staying at the station.
To stay safe. But then that's where the action ends up.
I know. I'm like, wow, that worked out great. So yeah, Spidey busts in and like the Beatles like, oh, I got my suitcase with it with all the envelopes and it doesn't seem like it's anything at all. I happen to check out some of these ads in here too, because they have a thing for Pizzazz.
Oh yeah, I loved Pizzazz. It was it was Marvel's version of Dynamite.
I was a Dynamite reader, Steve. Not sure. Because I could get both. Dynamite through Scholastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the parents would fall for that wheeze.
For sure.
That this was some important magazine of educational value.
You didn't want that Scholastic delivery coming and the teacher handing out everything and you not get something.
Yeah.
And I noticed there's a lot of ads for like new inventions or new exercises that can either buff you up without drugs, apparently. Although I'm, it seems like it's drugs. I laugh at all these things in here where it's like turn your belly fat into a hard, lean stomach. And then it talks about these guys doing it for 7 minutes and it was working so well, they had to cut the exercise down to 5 minutes.
Wow. It worked for Joe Weider.
Yes. And then you have your bullpen Boltons in here too. So I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of that. And then your hostess Twinkies snack cakes ad.
Mm.
But maybe the funniest thing in here was one like there's like a bunch of evidence on one of these I guess cabinets and a box falls off and then our hero cop here is just like, "Hey, that's heroin." So he's just, "I can use this. I can like go to the water dispenser, pour some water into this package of heroin." And I'm like, oh, don't tell me the Beatles gonna be running around on heroin after it gets into his sucker somehow. And
I couldn't believe it. They defeat him by jamming heroin up his suckers. I'm like,
it doesn't specifically say that the Beatle, but I have to assume
heroin paste.
That's how they defeat him.
I even had to Google, like, what happens when you mix heroin with water? Is that even something that you can determine? Like, will it really become a pasty?
I was curious. I'm like, is this Marvel science?
What I was hoping for is a few issues down the road, they have a little side piece about how the drug dealer gets off because now all the evidence was tampered with. Yeah. They're like, what evidence? All the heroin's gone. You don't have anything locked up.
Now, behind the heroin was also $1 million. But it still, to me, seemed a little bit like a Dr. Evil in Austin Powers thing, where it's like you're going after a briefcase full of heroin and $1 million, but you're paying like, you know, dozens and dozens of thugs to go out there and do your crime wave. You've got all that Kirby tech in that office and everything. Like, I'm thinking the overhead might exceed what the mark brings in.
I was kind of hoping it was going to be some kind of tech or something when it was revealed to just be $1 million. And I was also like, $1 million is physically a lot of stuff, too. Like, there's no fake container in that suitcase. The briefcase would weigh a ton. Like, you don't have $1 million is a lot of paper to carry around. And so that's the part that's always interesting. Like, in the heist movies, they always talk about that. You know, it's not like you're going to just stuff. We don't have $1,000 bills anymore or whatever. Uh-huh. So, yeah, that whole part left me a little... whatever, but I'm glad nobody died.
And he has only his fingers, and he can Abe stash it. Remember, there's all these lockers and secret places all over the city and across the country where you can go back to later on. It has your stuff, it has your money.
And Abe just has a small heroin problem now.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll work on that and come back better than ever.
And then Parker's a little creepy at the end. He's like, hey, now there's a story. I'll take a picture of his wife leaving, and then I can sell that picture. I'm like, who are you selling this to? Like some gossip?
Yep.
I don't know if the Daily Bugle is going to be publishing.
He's a hero, but his wife is leaving him.
Yeah.
I guess it worked for Tiger Woods. All right, Andrew. Give me a one. A Dunn and Warner.
All right. I went into the, again, this potentially could be more than Dunn and one, but Jabba's Palace number one. Ooh, from the Star Wars line.
This was great.
And I've always said that the big two guys have now almost, getting on close to 100 years of practice at filling, slotting stories in between spaces. So I feel like while I enjoy the more unhinged licensed books where they go off, I know that I always feel in good hands when they're like, okay, you have to slot this between A and B. These characters have to have this thing changed, but nothing else about them. Go for it. And they've learned how to tell great stories.
Yep.
The introduction of new characters, whether it's Dr. Aphra or whatever, that add stakes that you can't have. Like, we know Darth Vader's not going to get killed or whatever. So here we have a fun story about the back, Jabba's palace has all these backstories, and there's a line when R2 and C-3PO are gifted to Jabba from Luke that, oh, they need a translator because the last one was disintegrated. So this is going to be the story of how the last interpreter got disintegrated. Again, a perfect kind of throwaway line, but you're not so beholden to anything. All we need to know is at the end, our character gets disintegrated.
And I love how that's not the story. That's the last panel.
Yeah.
Right? Like that actually they managed to tell a whole other story. It just ends with, and that's how the droid got disintegrated. I'm like, okay.
So it's a fun, an appropriate, pun intended, palace intrigue story of this translator robot and how the translator has a disproportionate amount of power when you're in negotiations with all these different characters, and how the robot got kind of bored with it until this one Twi'lek shows up, Sylvan Khan, who is very manipulative and is able to manipulate the various parties.
Well, that's just it, because a translator has so much power in that situation, you want it to be a droid, because a droid's going to be neutral.
Yeah, and right? The droid overestimates his own neutrality in a way. So he ends up getting caught up in the machinations. And obviously, I don't think it's spoiling the end what happens to the guy. But it's a like I said, perfect sort of story for these guys to do.
Yep.
And I it's a Guggenheim, Miracola, kind of fun stuff. These Star Wars comics, I'm enjoying, like I said, they just give them a slice of time, and these characters you can't touch, these ones that you invent, you can do whatever you like with. So
I liked how the narrative, like the caption boxes and stuff, were from the droid's inner thinking, which is basically his processing, right? Like you're getting insight into how this machine is processing, and because he's processing all these intricate manipulative things, he's pretty accurately detecting humans being manipulative, right? And still you watch him stage by stage taking the journey to deciding to do what he does. And I just felt like it was a Star Wars-y microcosmic story that like relates to stories of like dissenters and how people come to the conclusion that kind of like what they're doing isn't right, and what does it make, how do you get people to change course, how do you get a machine to change course? And again, a machine is reliant on the input that is, you know, programmed into it. So it's just, I thought it was really cleverly done. I had a lot of fun with it.
The, like I said, the kind of confidence of the machine that he wouldn't get sucked in was exactly how he got sucked in.
For sure. Yep.
So that part made it just a fun kind of, but I don't really, I mean, obviously his story can't go on, but I assume they're just going to tell these kind of one-off stories of all the rich characters. We can do the, there was a whole bunch of books like that too, based for each of the movies, where they just told little side stories about, take a point in one of the movies and then make a little short story about it. So, well done all around.
All right, our last done in one for this round here is from July 1977. I had just turned 7 the month before and bought this one off the shelf.
And you hope this guy called Dr. Druid was going to get his own ongoing series.
Yeah, no. But it's where I knew Dr. Druid from when he showed up in other books later in like the Avengers and stuff. It's like, oh yeah, I know him from Ghost Rider 26, which was written by Jim Shooter, who was the regular writer on the book at the time, and art by Don Perlin and Sam Granger. And this is Don Perlin's, I think, first issue as penciler, but he would go on to pencil a lot of this first volume until Bob Budiansky would take over. The cover, though, is George Perez with heavy Rudy Nabriz inks over it. But, you know, Perez with the small fire around the Ghost Rider's head, which they really even made smaller because they didn't want it to overlap in the logo the way that the cover is, with the Ghost Rider coming in on his bike as Druid, Dr. Druid, is the larger figure in the forefront. Anyway, the issue opens with the Ghost Rider crossing the LA freeway on his hell cycle. He like slides under a semi and cruises up a dirt hill, all while, you know, leaving a flaming trail and everything. But it's a little bit like a game of Frogger where he's got to just like cross.
You can tell this was a long time ago, Steve, because he's doing 70, way past 70 in broad daylight. And I'm like, yeah, he wasn't doing this anytime in the last couple decades with LA traffic. But yeah, you go on, you get on with yourself and enjoy it. Those freeways are just going to get jammed and jammed and jammed.
The Ghost Rider discovers his girl Roxanne's making out with another fella, and like at first he's gonna crush this guy's head using all of the Ghost Rider's power, but he smartly gets out of there. But not so smartly, rides out of control through the woods, crashes, and then gets even more frustrated and starts like punching rocks and just like burning circles in the grass. He's like in a petulant frenzy. Meanwhile, Dr. Druid, who's an investigator of the occult, has heard of this Ghost Rider and goes to Johnny Blaze's work, which is a cycle show, of course, and hypnotizes his boss and Karen Page, who also works there.
What?
Swear to God. And she was even part of a little like love triangle of interest.
That's so weird.
In fact, Johnny comes into work with a smile on his face and a spring in his step because he saw Roxanne kissing that other guy. That means, you know what? It's time for Karen Page. Like, he's going to go finally ask her out. And she's, like, not really responsive because she's been hypnotized by Druid.
And I love the cartoony sort of Ghost Rider-y. And his, like, the bike is just like a bike filled with flames coming out. It's a very fun, like, it's sort of count. It's not as menacing as it could be. I mean, it's not, I don't think it's, I like it. So, but I could see how some people wanted a more maybe serious Ghost Rider, because the content of what they're talking about is very serious, but he looks so friendly, Steve.
So, Johnny Blaze gets attacked by Dr. Druid, who forces the Ghost Rider to come forth in front of everyone including Roxy, Karen, and his boss. And they fight, surprisingly, mostly with their fists. So it's just like, psh, 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 they're just punching at each other, which really seemed almost comical as I was reading it. Like you said, Andrew, there was something comedic to this. The Ghost Rider gets the upper hand, but he doesn't kill Druid, who then gets the upper hand himself using an amulet to force the Ghost Rider back into Johnny Blaze, and then Druid knocks him out with a left to the teeth, and then a roundhouse right down over the bridge of Blaze's nose and knocks him out. Boom. So, with Blaze out, he then uses his mystical powers, Druid does, and determines that, well, you know what? Although Blaze's Ghost Rider powers come from Satan, it turns out he's not evil himself, and he really isn't doing Satan's bidding, so Dr. Druid just leaves. He destroyed Johnny's social life and his means of employment, beat the snot out of him, and then just splits.
Nice guy.
Well, if I was Johnny, I'd be like, hey, can you bring that device back that turns me back into Johnny Blaze? Because sometimes I don't like being Ghost Rider, so it'd be nice if he could, you know, have something to turn that on and off at will, you know, to sort of smooth his life out as well.
Yeah, so Johnny's got nothing left there himself and leaves too as the issue ends. So. That's kind of fun. In a few done and ones like that, you don't get into anything too epic, and there's a certain pace that a done and one story has to take, right, to be able to get everything in. Kind of fun.
Yeah, a good start and a good ending point, and just move the pieces in between. And have fun doing it. Superhero Squad. Superhero Squad. Superhero Squad. Superhero Squad. Welcome back, listeners. You're in for a treat. It's the New Warrior segment returning. Yes, our 22nd segment on the New Warriors. You know, new as in the 90s, not new as in now, Marvel, now.
And, Marvel and new, not now? New as in those new Warriors. What was it? Snowflake? Twitter? What was his? The only one I remember now is Snowflake.
We're already off the rails, but it's me, Andrew the Other Rabbit, and WWX Kev down in the New Warriors' secret headquarters. Bum, bum, bum. Yes, 22nd. Our 22nd time gathering. Super Steve is away. He was caught up in the Clone Saga. He told us tearfully that those comics were so good, he just can't get through them because he cries at their beauty.
I thought he's still reading them because he said, guys, once I've read a little bit of the Clone Saga, I got to read it all. And there's another whole omnibus for him to read. So, yeah, he couldn't finish in time. But when you said it was a treat, I thought you were going to say that Super Steve was here.
Oh, no. Not that much of a treat. No. But this could be our penultimate episode. We're reaching the end of this great run. Now, what we're doing is we started with when the New Warriors came about with the Thor issues and New Warriors 1 and marching through their annuals. Some of the tie-ins, not all of them. That's always a controversial issue. But... we're not going to relitigate that here. We are now right in the end where we've turned the corner. It's the backside of the 90s. So things are going to get a little crazy for Marvel Corporate, and things are going to get a little crazy for our New Warriors. But we've marched down. We've saw the original team leave. We're pretty well ensconced in the current new team, and they have a pretty decent long run, the Skolnick, Zurcher, Peepoy team. They were in the previous ones and continue in this. So that's kind of nice to see that there wasn't a ton of fill-ins for this last little run-up to the end. We're going to be looking at New Warriors 67-71 in this episode. So follow along. It's going to be a little bit tricky. Only the first one of those is on the Unlimited. But as we said recently, there is additional omnibuses coming out, which usually means they will be moving this to digital as well. Kevin, it's the mid-90s, turning the corner. Are you reading comics? I'm out of comics, generally. Are you reading comics at this time?
I'm reading comics, but as I think I mentioned last time, I'm chunking some of these issues together. But I don't think it's necessarily New Warrior's fault. It's just, like, I didn't read the Clone Saga month to month. Like, I remember reading those, like, in big sections at a time. So once New Warriors got wrapped into that, I'm pretty sure that's why I fell off New Warriors. And then I missed that issue, and I'm think it's easy to see now that why I didn't notice I had missed an issue, because I wasn't reading them month to month, because it was a Clone Saga. So, I mean, it wasn't until I think I saw the cover for issue 74 that I was like, oh, I better be up to date. And I'm not going to reveal what's on the cover of 74, but something made me pretty excited.
Yeah, as someone who came back into comics a solid decade later, trying to immerse yourself. I mean, now it's a lot easier with digital comics, but the Clone Saga business is pretty impenetrable if you just have a bunch of random issues. It really seems like, and from what I've seen in my sampling, that because of so many, everything was crossing over. And I feel like it just made it not a great experience, unless you were kind of all in. It made it hard to pick up, because we've already seen there's just so many random, like, you know, 4, 5, 6 parts, and each different part is in a different comic book. Not my cup of tea, shall I say. But as Kevin noted, the New Warriors have been folded into the Spider-Man family, and we've seen Scarlet Spider as a member of the team, and is our tradition. Kevin, who is on our current New Warriors roster?
Well, we have Speedball, Robbie, someone as another member of our team keeps on saying he's going to be dead soon. So I hope his cat can save him and, you know, give him some of that, a kinetic boost. Firestar, Angelica, who's potentially killing people with radiation and microwaves. Turbo, Mickey, who's a turbo. Torpedo, not a turbo.
her character saying? Name is Turbo, but she stole the outfit from the character formerly known as Torpedo.
Yes, and then the other guy's not very good with the costume, so, I mean, can't really blame her. So, I mean, apparently she just wanted to explore the world, and she got roped into this heroing thing, so. Justice, Vance, you know, one of those mutant TK Fury kind of guys, and he has some weird connection to alternate timeline future self from the Guardians of the Galaxy
and team leader. Don't forget.
Team leader. Yeah, he's always angsting about he'll never be as good of a leader as Night Thrasher. Scarlet Spider, not really. I get he's sort of been not yeah, kicked
he's,
off
he's
the
gonna
team.
Be out.
I didn't read the issue, so I'm not exactly sure what happened to him, and I didn't want to pull on that thread. But he's not really part of the team. But Spider-Man's sort of part of the team because he's Ben Reilly. I don't know. It's a whole thing. They're, at some point, it seems like they're phasing out of the Spider group, because you can see when they're phasing in, they don't have the logo on the cover, but they have the editorial page there for the Spider group. And at the end of these issues, they still have the logo on the cover, but the editorial page is no longer there anymore. Then you have Powerhouse. Alex Power, where he steals the powers from his siblings. And then our newish character, who's been around for, 8 issues, but hasn't really fought anyone, Time Slip, Rena. And Nova's not, I don't think, does he even appear in here at all? Like, just to mope around and go, I don't have any powers? Like, I don't think he's even in here. And anyone else, I don't think is really in here either. So, I mean... Ooh. Who knows about in the future, but right now... Oh, Hindsight Lad. Andrew, you always make sure I bring up Hindsight Lab.
I do. And we had just had a fun issue of detailing Robbie's backstory. It's a little bit fun. That was probably my favorite from the last batch, but he's the one that our newest member of the team has predicted will die a horrible death, and that's put him off a little bit. Plus, we have Chimera, I don't know how we say it, but she is still brainwashed and an enemy agent. So that we're hoping they wrap back around at some point, but the issues are running out. So just to demonstrate the confusion, the first issue we pick up, which is the last one on the Unlimited, is a crossover with Web of Scarlet Spider. You remember that title, Kevin? It lasted for all of four issues.
That long-running series of four issues, yes. It sounds a bit like an Age of Apocalypse thing where, like, we'll replace our regular books.
So, to demonstrate, we're going to talk about three and four, but the first issue is part one of Virtual Morality. So Web of Scarlet Spider number two is part one of Cyber War. So again, they're completely so it's a real, don't bother, like, unless you're going to go and read, because as Kevin said, they're, you know, they're rebooting all those other titles, so it just crosses with the, you know, Ben Reilly Spectacular Scarlet Spider and Amazing Scarlet Spider and all that nonsense. But mercifully, for three and four, they decided to do parts one and three of this crossover, Nightmare and Scarlet, which is going to be kind of ending Scarlet Spider's association with the New Warriors. Now, Kevin, you did not read those Scarlet Spider issues, correct?
That is correct. You couldn't get me to do that.
I did, and I think you don't need to, but I wanted to confirm that, in fact, you did not need to. The only thing that's kind of interesting is I enjoyed having a different, like, I like Peepoy and Zercher, I've talked a lot about, but it was kind of cool, the Paris Karanoulis and Randy Emberlin. So it was kind of fun seeing their take on, you know, Firestar and those characters too. So that's basically the most fun of it is. But we have a undercover policeman who, as part of the machinations in the Scarlet Spider storyline, Lady Dr. Octopus had experimented on him, and he had merged with this kind of technovirus, for lack of a better word. I'm not going to try and get in the weeds of this, so forgive any gross generalizations. But he is a good man, but when he gets taken over by the Scarlet Spider robot entity, he turns evil because one of the prime directives is to ruin the Scarlet Spider's actual reputation.
What? Well, that was a mouthful. When he turns into the Scarlet Spider, who is a robot.
Well, in issue three of Scarlet Spider, he still looks like Scarlet Spider. And that's when...
Who looks like Peter Parker?
Well, he's supposed to look like Ben Reilly, who really is Peter. Yes. Well, let's not get into this clone business. But basically, it has the New Warriors decide they're going to search for him because Scarlet Spider is acting really weird and he was a New Warrior and they need to get to the bottom of it. So in Crisscrossing the City Split Up, our fiery, amazing friend finds him and she's like, what's wrong with you? You're acting weird. And when he kisses her, she realizes he's metal. Like made of metal, not metal as in that's so metal, like Metallica sort of thing. Like he's metallic, not metal like the rock music. So when she kind of zaps him, he knocks her out, but he's gone all silver. It like boils away. So that's basically all you need out of that. And then it gets you right to the New Warriors issue where it starts where it actually starts where the last one picks up, with him all silver, kind of looking a little Captain Universe-y maybe without the blue, over Firestar, and Vance jumps in. He's always been jealous. And then they have their big fight. So Kevin, because later on they explain that he's the secret agent and all that stuff. So I don't think you missed anything, did you, from that first issue? Skipping it?
No, it's just very strange.
Yeah, so they're
I don't
all...
know if you get a conclusion to the story either. Like, it's just...
Well, you well, that's what you are missing, but you are you really missing it, Kevin? I'm going to tell you no. take my word for it. You're not really missing the conclusion of this exciting story, but I think they do fine. Part of it is just reestablishing the Spider status quo, which is Ben Reilly, who is the original Spider-Man, who was told he was a clone, is now no longer being the Scarlet Spider by this. He's back to being Spider-Man, but he doesn't want anyone to know that the Scarlet Spider was Spider-Man. So there's lots of hints. Like Vance and Angelica are always like, how do you know this about the New Warriors? Seems suspicious that Spider-Man, who we don't know, knows where our headquarters are. And
I started thinking about some of that stuff because they're like, oh, how do you know we have communicators? I mean, you mean that big, giant yellow thing you wear on your costume that totally stands out? I don't know. It's weird. And then they're like, oh, well, because the Scarlet Spider has gone evil and ruining his reputation, you know, our team's going to be ruined in the media because of it. And I'm like, maybe? And I'm like, maybe they'll think it's not Scarlet Spider because he looks really different. But then I thought, well, characters show up with new costumes all the time and everyone must go, oh, that's the same guy. So
yeah,
maybe,
but, he now...
but then a villain can show up and easily impersonate you and ruin you.
Not just that, but he physically looks a lot larger. Like, it's not like a different... He's now a giant robot in some, like, with different appendages and freakish looking. And so it's a significant change.
And how many clones are running around at this point?
Oh, my... You need a scorecard to keep up. It's not... And me randomly reading issues isn't going to answer it. But I did like that they're trying to have the new character, Time Slip, whose reason she's in this is because she sees Robbie dying, try to connect with Robbie a little bit. So that was a nice moment. But as we've seen previously, guess who one of the hostages is that the Scarlet Spider takes, Kevin?
Oh, could it be a family member, maybe?
Yeah. Didn't we have Robbie's mom already involved in multiple plots in this thing?
Yeah. Didn't she go to another country or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wonder if she runs into Mary Jane at all. Because it seems like they'd be on like the same type of shows.
Yeah, they are both famous soap actresses, but that's where the New Warrior ends on the cliffhanger of Scarlet Spider. He's on live TV with a bunch of hostages, including Robbie's mom, so Robbie has to go save her. The wrap-up in 4 is not particularly interesting. All the characters converge, the New Warriors, Spider-Man, Robbie, to fight the Scarlet Spider, but how it resolves itself is Joe's partner, who gets hurt in the battle, approaches Scarlet Spider and is like, I know you're a good man in there, and you can fight this thing. And so he fights it and fights off and turns back human at the end. And that's the resolution. So you get a little bit of fighting, but it's mostly just the real story was inside him all along sort of thing. It's fine. Like I said, it's fun. It's free if you're reading it on the Unlimited, although your time is worth something. I don't know if it's worth this, but at least it's wrapped up there, and we need to move off of that and get to... The advantage is the next 4 issues are a self-contained internal story, Future Shock. So at least we're not crossing over with weird spider clones. But unfortunately for me, unfortunately for Kevin, it's a time travel story.
Yeah, you know, 1996 Kevin was a little hyped to do a jump back and read this. Because then you chunk it. That'll be good to read all at once. You know, maybe during summer vacation? I'm not entirely sure.
Well, I do suggest reading them all at once. My problem with time travel is I like it to be usually fairly simple. Because it doesn't exist and there can be a lot of contradictions, I like it when they keep the story fairly basic, because time travel can really because anything can be positive. If you don't have any rules, then just the characters can always go back and fix it, so to speak. So that's why in, you know, Bill and Ted or Back to the Future, Kang or Doctor Doom stories, they always have whatever weird rules are in place.
Something about divergent timelines or...
Yeah, however you want to do it. And I thought this story didn't do a great... For me, I like knowing those rules sooner rather than later, because then you can see, oh, here are the stakes. Like, they can only do A, B, and C. They can't do D, E, and F because of the... Like, I don't care what the rules are. I just want to know them, because that creates the tension. Like, I didn't really care in the Avengers movies. I know some people didn't like their time travel, and I'm like, that was... They took time travel to mean how they explained it in the movie. I didn't really care either way. They explained it. It worked for me. Maybe that's not my favorite time travel story, but because they gave me the rules, I felt more invested in it. Where in this story, the rules get kind of told whenever they get told. And so I had less of a sense of stakes about it. Does that make sense, Kevin?
I think so.
How did you approach this? I was confused
as that was Cable on the first page. Or a Fury, maybe.
The nice slash bad thing is they use a ton of cover real estate to give us the Future Shock branding.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm sure whoever bought these original covers still paid the same price.
You know, if you can figure it out, you might be able to tell that the Guardians of the Galaxy are here. No, not those Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, for sure, I would recognize Yondu. I'm not sure I would have pulled that was Charlie 27.
Yeah.
The problem is he is just a large guy. So I'm used to him being in kind of that weird armor that he used to wear. And also him being more all around big. This guy has big arms, but his head doesn't. Charlie 27 had kind of a funny looking head when he first came out. And Vance always seemed to change his outfits all the time, so... But yeah, that's who's spoiled on the cover. Now, this issue also felt way too much setup and fluff for me. Because we're going to have divergent timelines. So there's a 1947 timeline where a character from the future, who's going to be known as Advent, ends up coming. And he's the one that's going to play a role. But his explanation of who he is kind of gets paid out over the four issues, but he's from 2099. Now, I've read some of that, but not a lot. But are these characters you knew from 2099, Kevin? The father and son, who the father ends up becoming Advent?
Oh boy. Not that I recall.
Okay. Cause I didn't know them either. I thought there might have been more playing up the 2099-ness to it. I mean, like, they say Shock and stuff, but there wasn't a lot of, yeah. Like, oh, look, it's, you know, all the characters or a lot of references. Or if they were, they went over my head, except for What the Shock and the Alchemix Company, and that was about the only ones.
Yeah, like, you know, it's not a lot of time removed from those books, you know, ending or that line getting canceled. But even at this point, like, I don't know if I was remembering characters, but I didn't even read the whole line, so
okay, so say. I don't feel bad. Well, at a minimum, it's not like the big Spider-Man 2099 bad guy or anything. It's, if they're in there, they're subtle. I just thought it seemed like more of a chance to really give us more of that world, and I felt we didn't get a lot of it. But I guess, I don't know, it just would have been a funny tie-in, I think. But I also kind of like the 2099 world, so, and I'm enjoying discovering it now. So that's going contemporaneously, and because of the situation, the story, and the character time slips powers, there's a lot of, like, we get a whole sequence and then it resets again, and we get a whole sequence and it resets, and it's accurately done to confuse us. But I think, again, if I knew the rules or whatever, the stakes would feel more dire here, because I don't know the rules, they don't feel particularly important.
You know, if Super Steve was here, he'd probably say something about the risk game taking too many pages.
I thought it was a nice fake out.
But I was thinking of the X-Men when they play you know, their baseball and everything. Like, it's just one of those things to goof off.
Yeah, it was. I think my problem is because the rest of the issue feels like filler too. Like, it's okay to have this if the rest of it has more substance. You know what I mean? But to have the filler of the game on top of the kind of fake out, Guardian show up, they end up fighting because they sense the anomaly is actually Robbie. And so then that ends up all getting reset by Time Slip.
Yeah.
So I felt a little like, so I got filler on filler. Although I love Wonder Man in his Hollywood outfit. I'm not an expert on these Guardians. I like them. I always like Nikki. I always like Martin X, Yondu. Vance was cool. I mean, they have the one guy that flips genders, but I just love Hollywood is what they called Simon Wonder Man when he, you know, because he can't die because of his ionic energy or whatever.
But just they always have to collect him up again.
Just, I don't know. That's a fun character. But again, our heroes fighting seems a bit of a waste. The other thing...
Well, at least Vance gets to meet Vance. Because do you remember early on, if it was issue 4 or whatever, they said, oh, this is what's coming in the first year. And they said that Guardians of the Galaxy was going to be coming into the book. It never happened. But now here we are, like all this way into the title, and finally they meet up.
Yeah, well, they're going to, you know, they gotta deliver on those promises. I mean, we're going to see what happens to Robbie finally.
Yeah.
The other thing I didn't realize, and Kevin, you're the expert, when did Helix join the team? Like, last I knew, he was in their little jail cell.
Yeah.
Down in the basement. And suddenly, they're like, yeah, he's part of the team. He's hanging out. We're teaching him English. Like, I was like, what? Did I miss an issue? Was there an annual or something in here where he... Last I saw, you guys locked him in a cell, and now he's just one of the gang. Like, I felt for all that padding, we could have had in a page or two explaining how Helix ended up joining.
Well, you know, sometimes I look up these issues. I'm like trying to figure out the reading order or whatever I need, whatever tidbit I need to look up, right? Some character or something. And I remember Helix being listed. And then it said team member. And I was like, what? So I was confused there too. And I don't know, do you count the, hey, he's locked away for his own good, but we're really feeding him and everything and teaching him, so he's really a member of the team. Like, that's not how I remember this, and that's not how I read this.
Yeah, I'm in the same, I was just like, this whole thing, last we saw, he was literally their prisoner. And look, it wasn't like he was a bad guy, like, I get it, but maybe that whole, like, oh, we're rehabilitating, like, a throwaway page for all the filler that was in here, they could have wasted a page having someone go down and be like, hey, we're gonna help you and get you in and teach you English or whatever. But it seems like a whole bit about getting him to speak English, and I'm like, it just feels like I missed an issue or something somewhere. But anyways, that was the funny thing. So the fight happens and there's no consequence to it, because again, we get this Time Slip kind of resets the thing, and she's like, oh my god, it's gonna happen, they're gonna show up, except they don't show up. Super Steve's, one of his favorite characters, shows up. Kevin, do you want to spoil who shows up on the last page?
Sphinx. What's with his weird body thing there happening?
It reminds me of Jason Woodrue from DC Comics.
Yeah. Is he doing a Groot thing? Like, I'm not quite sure what's happening.
And we've read a lot of his appearances.
Yeah.
But a classic villain that shows up. But again, I'm fine with the breather and all that, but explain Helix, maybe have some consequence. This whole issue is just the reveal of Phoenix, really, and some setup. But now, the next issue has that dramatic cover of Time Slip, classic superhero holding the dead superhero, kind of in cradling them. And somehow I ended up with two copies of this issue.
Well,
because, you know, I assembled the run by buying, sometimes you buy batches, you know, and somehow I goofed and have two copies. So if someone needs a New Warrior 69, come talk to me.
Well, as long as you didn't goof on buying a Marvel Masterworks again or something, that's, you know.
No.
And yeah, I gotta say, don't you want to be able to flip this when that Death of Speedball thing happens in the MCU? You'll be like, you'll be there.
Well, I gotta say, Peepoy and Zercher are bringing it. Like on the Risk, those scenes, they draw so much detail in every background. Like every little poster and vial and knob and switch, they look like they're really killing it. And let me tell you, some of these are wordy books too. Like a lot of people go on monologues and stuff, so yeah, tip of the hat, wordy. I enjoyed how super detailed they pack. I feel anyways they really pack this detail.
Yeah, it's not wordy and then they go, oh, I read that in 5 minutes. Like, it's not that type of wordy. And no, it looks like he's practicing his how he's going to draw techno in the future.
So basically, this is the real beginning of the issue. In fact, I bet you could skip the last one, really. Just start here. Which starts with a big, Sphinx is here to kill Robbie to save the universe, but he's couching everything very vague. He just has to kill him to save all of time and everything everywhere. But a really fun fight sequence where people are getting punched, like, to the next state, and train locomotives are being thrown. With this kind of detail, it's really just fun. Like, I was all on board for big, dumb fun. I mean, this is the kind of story I want, not the, we're going to have some convoluted time travel in the next issue.
You know, I was happy to see the current Nova in this issue. I'm like, oh, there we go. Some little continuity fun here. See what he's up to.
Yeah, he is stationed and collecting intel on our backwards planet of Earth. But because of the danger he senses from this fat battle, he goes down to fight it, to duke it out and join in the fight. And it's just everybody's pouring everything against the Sphinx. They can't do anything. It gets so bad, they send Time Slip away. They're like, Turbo, race her away. And we're going to have Firestar unleash her ultimate microwave weapon, even though it could kill her or at least make her sterile.
And maybe other people too.
Yeah.
But, it reminds me of when the Human Torch burnt down that university.
Yeah. When he goes so she goes supernova to steal his bit, but the Sphinx teleports away, so she just destroys a whole bunch of New Jersey. And Nova has to absorb all the toxic chemicals and everything that she leaked out. And then he goes away because he's getting his messages from Queen Adora. No, not from He-Man, but Queen Adora from the whole Nova Corps. And well, we talked about the Nova series in what some would say is far too much detail a few segments back. So, you know, you can check that out in Marvel Noise episode 408 if you want a very lengthy chat about the 17 issue Nova series.
It wasn't that bad. I mean, it wasn't really good, but it wasn't that bad.
Did you like it more than 8-Ball, Kevin?
Oh, jeez.
But that series ended with our Nova losing his power to this Nova. So it's been a couple of issues, not that many. So finally, you know, this is like almost Death of Superman drag out this fight. But finally, you know, the Sphinx blasts him in the chest. And then we get the ending. You know, and Robbie's dying.
He's dead.
And he has some weird thoughts at the end, and who doesn't? And then that's it. And then she has another one of her little brain fogs, which happen. And they all get to complain to the Sphinx. Why did you do it?
Why?
What's going on? Why, man, why? And then when it ends, the last panel is Speedball, but in his civilian outfit. Looking kind of a little bit Guy Fieri with the hair and the facial hair. And that was a weird, I guess his outfit is generated by the future world or whatever. Like the kinetic dimension makes his outfit.
It's a bubble
suit. Yeah.
Yeah, there's not a lot of good ads in these comics either, but I did have to note the Marvel Interactive CD-ROM comic books. Over 80 pages of authentic comic book action. Back issue reference. Real Marvel animation.
I had a computer
Marvelous
that ran
games
those.
Of trivia. It looks like Stan Lee shows up at one point.
If I had a computer that played those, I totally would. And how can you diss the Spider-Man cereal, Kevin? Mister, the ads aren't any good. The Spider-Man cereal alone.
Hasn't I'm sure that been running tasty. For a while?
I also love the Spider-Man Chef Boyardee. It's very hard for me, even today as an adult, when I walk by and see. That stuff is not good, by the way. I mean, it's good when you're a kid, but it tastes really bad as an adult. But every time I see all the tie-ins, I'm always like, do I need some X-Men canned pasta that tastes terrible?
Well, you know, when I see some green bananas and they put a sticker of the Wasp on it, I'm like, oh, must buy those bananas.
Product, I am a... Oh, wait, I think that's from a kid. I was programmed, like... Those cereal box tie-ins. When DC ran those little mini comics, I went and bought every box of cereal to get them all. Just sad. But that leads us to... Oh, sorry, Kevin. Go ahead.
I just it's so weird when you look at the little text for that CD-ROM, and then it says the comic is by like Toy Biz Incorporated.
Yeah, well, and also a lot of promotion for the Malibu stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, don't they ask at one point, they're like, something about, like, there's kind of a weird reference, some church reference or something. I was just like, what are they? I can't find it anymore. But it was strange anyways.
I mean, I know on Sister Show Indie, we've talked a little Malibu, but I really don't. Malibu is a big blind spot. And the Malibu Marvel crossover, maybe that's something we need. I need you and Super Steve to educate me on the wonders that is all those great comics. Kind of like you guys promised to cover the Clone Saga over 600 parts.
I believe that was you. I think you already volunteered us. And I'm like, I give a sigh and I go, all right, if you want to. What the funny thing is, though, in all these issues... I think I was most interested by the Clone Saga issue, oddly enough.
Well, I liked that one was fun because it was just a big, dumb Death of Superman style fight. So that one, this is where the series didn't slow down, but it just went a little, I don't care. Like, this is, I felt, just info dump and all our twists that I would have liked earlier. And also with her just... slipping around, and when you're not involved in the story, the fact that their characters are kind of caricatures, like they overreact to things because it's a melodrama, you know, it's a comic book, it's not real, so everybody's kind of on 11, so all those kind of like suddenly they'll yell at one of their teammates or whatever, it just feels so, unless you're invested in the story, it just feels weird. And then with her having all these freak outs and time slipping. But eventually, the character I spoiled from 2099 called Advent shows up. Now, I'm familiar with his calendar, Kevin, but I'm not familiar with him. It's a little religious joke, Kevin. Advent calendars. They're at Christmas. You know, they got the chocolate in them. And his whole thing is a super tech suit that kind of makes him look a bit like, well, if we're doing Death of Superman, he's like the robot version of the guy that killed Doomsday.
I am Cyborg Advent.
Yeah. And again, we have these weird kind of thought balloons that are in the same color as before. And it's time slip, but it might be a little bit more. And Advent just goes and wipes out the entire team except for time slip. And she has this whole running model. This didn't really work for me. And then you get the story of the father and son. And the father's advent, and they're in the future, and they're working on time travel. And I feel like, oh yeah, they're going to break the time travel barrier, which hasn't been done since at least Dr. Doom in the 1960s.
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, I'm sure, yeah. Like, there's been so much. Doom is there in the future.
So much time travel. Yeah, Doom 2099. So I feel like, but anyways, the whole point is, it's time travel, but he's... encapsulating, his son is staying behind, but he's encapsulated in a special bubble, because as you change time, you'll forget that it was different from before. type of thing. That's their rules, I guess. So he has to be in a separate kind of outside of time so that he can know the old time, because they're going to fix it. And so that's when he realizes, when his dad goes back, the process doesn't work. The whole series started with it failing, and the dad gets integrated into the tech and turns evil. And so as a result, the dad's going to take over everything. He ends up intervening in a Spider-Man fight where Spider-Man was supposed to stop a nuke, but he foils that, so the nuke goes off.
That is so weird.
Accelerates, leading to this. And as I've talked about before, I don't really like these let's kill, you know, 20 million people to up the stakes thing. But I don't fault anyone who likes that in Marvel. I just feel like it's not really a Marvel thing to, like, yeah, we'll nuke New York City. It just feels so like we're clearly not going to really do that. Like, those stakes are too big. Sure, Gotham City, they're going to blow it up 100 times or whatever, but New York, they're not really going to have it get blown up in a nuclear explosion for real continuity. You know what I mean? For me, anyways. So the son realizes the dad went crazy. He reaches into the kinetic dimension, who's protected, and cooks up Speedball. So it turns out the Speedball that showed up several issues back was the son in Speedball's body, but sublimated himself to Speedball's personality.
Well, we know Speedball was weird.
Yeah.
It seems like you forget. You're like, oh, he's acting normal now. It's just like Speedball.
Yeah, so I will admit, Kevin, I did not suspect that Speedball was actually a character from 2099 who had hidden his personality deep inside a cloned version of him. I'll be the first to admit, I didn't reread the old issues to see if it... But did you grok to that, Kevin? Were you the whole time thinking, there's something off about Speedball? I don't like it. It's as if there's another character hidden below him from 2099.
Like there's a backup personality? Like,
yeah, like a Tony other, Stark.
Someone across the street?
Yes. Oh, no, I was thinking like Tony Stark, who always has those backups.
I feel like that's a different type of backup.
Yeah, so I feel like they wanted this to have more of a... I don't know, and I wonder if having this at the beginning would have had more of a sting, but it didn't... I don't know, I don't want to sound like a cold fish or nothing, but it didn't... I didn't have an emotional reaction to that reveal. Kevin, this is not where you have silence. This is where you reach out and either condemn my cold-heartedness or offer compassion and say, well, look, Andy, just because I cried doesn't mean that... you have to do the same.
I kind of feel like I knew it was a story and it's time travel. Like, I don't... I mean, I love when people get so involved in their stories and everything. Like, even though, like, it'll say, oh, here you'll die and there you'll live. And then you're, like, crying and like, no, I can't believe he's dead forever. Or, here's a cosmic cube, but Captain America's going to be a Nazi forever and ever. Like, I love that people get that involved. So I think I knew, like, yeah, they're setting up, oh, Speedball is going to die. So you kind of figure, oh, they'll figure a way. Maybe they'll figure a way around it, but maybe it's one of those stories where he has to be dead. But then, like, it's a time travel story. So, I mean, there's something built in there that something can happen.
Now,
and I wasn't reading it all month to month anyway, no, so I could just go on to the next issue. So it wasn't like a big thing either.
Now, do you prefer when they kill a character that they let him stay dead for a couple of issues to a year or so? Or do you like it when they just like, yeah, that was just a thing for an issue, he's back?
I guess it depends who's writing it and what the story is. Like...
because I thought it would have been cool to maybe leave him dead for a little bit, but, like, it doesn't even last an issue. So, I mean, it lasts this issue.
I mean, he's one of the top characters that you're looking forward to, so... I'm like, I don't need another character missing.
Chimera, where are you? Also...
exactly.
Don't really like blonde Spider-Man, can I say?
Well, he can't look like Peter Parker, so he has to dye his hair.
So once we get this complicated story, Time Slip ends up with Spider-Man fighting Advent, and this is when the nuke's going to go off. And the nuke does go off. She's able to use her Time Slip power. I mean, it's a cool idea and well rendered on the page of the explosion and her kind of just outracing the explosion. Like, while it's happening behind her in her superpower thing and she's crying. Like, visually, it works for me. But story-wise, it's hard to... Like I said, I'm not... Destruction on that scale doesn't seem like it's a... This isn't the Ultimate Universe where they're gonna flood New York forever. You know what I mean? It just isn't...
Did it work for you, though, when we have the sideways? It's weird. You get a sideways double page spread and then a sideways opening page.
Yeah, I don't... I feel like that could have been done in a different way. But I don't. I'm not as invested in this story, so weirdly enough, it doesn't bother me as much. You ever have that when you're just kind of like, I'm liking the art, and that's the story's okay, and I'm not following it. My heart really isn't in it. I'm just enjoying it for the page, so I don't mind. But this is where the gimmick gets even gimmickier, because now our son recorded a hologram that he left in 2099, because, spoiler, Advent didn't kill the New Warriors. When they were attacked, they ended up getting sent to 2099.
Oh, sort of like in that Avengers movie where Tony Stark didn't commit genocide when he killed all those aliens. He just transported them somewhere else.
Yeah, so it felt kind of weird. But they have to explain to the characters this whole bit that we got explained in, you know, now they can figure it out and they can have their fight with Advent, who I don't, and I like Zercher and Peepoy a lot, but the Advent design, I mean, again, I don't know. It's just like a generic robot looking guy. I mean, the cape is nice.
What about the
but
tubes?
All he has is a few lights on him. I don't know. I just felt
the tubes,
some color contrast or something might happen. I don't know. But anyways,
I feel like if Super Steve was here too, he could tell us a little bit more about this Thor 500. That looks pretty wild. This is the Golden Realm has fallen, and someone's going to have to rebuild it. Good thing Thor has a hammer, but it looks strange.
Well, you know, Deodato has had a lot of role, a lot of styles, and this is a very yoked Thor.
Yeah, like, and all, I guess that's
even
the
his head and hair. But I, part of that whole thing about the rules happening is Time Slip goes back to undo the explosion, and even she says, "My abilities never worked like that before." And I feel like you already broke your, you know, this is a 4-issue story, and you can't structure it so that you can't have it work without. Like, that to me is a real cheat. Well, like, in the wrap-up, if they're like, oh, I have a new power, that feels very like those old 60s Spider-Man ones where suddenly some character develops some ability for an issue to defeat the villain or whatever. But this, I felt, was a little bit dirty pool. Kevin,
I mean,
your
that,
thoughts?
That was a bit like the 70s comics. It's like, you know, when they don't really have a feel for some characters like Hellstrom or something, it's like, oh, why don't we just say he can do this now?
I agree.
But I think she says at some point, it's like, oh, I don't really know my powers, so, I mean, I gotta push myself to the limit to see what I can do. And when you push yourself to the limit, you find out you have all these different powers you never knew you had.
Yeah, that's the part that maybe doesn't ring as true. The I have a bunch of new powers that I just needed to work harder for. It just feels very like the story needed this, and I don't. Andy doesn't like that. I feel like we're in this thing now. Don't do this to me. But I do. They haven't really explained her time slip power to me, anyways. I don't know how it works.
She slips through time.
Well, I do like she steals the police's baton and then does her slip to, like, beat Advent up a lot. Although I would think, like, if his armor's any good, Like, wouldn't it just not feel like anything with a baton? But that, I thought it was a cool
attack. That's the weird thing. It's like, a gun's not going to work on it, so I'm just going to use this police baton, which surprisingly is really effective.
Yeah, more effective than bullets. But anyways, she and then tells Spider-Man to deactivate the nuke. Well, I guess there's a lot more in that last issue about the father and son and the time bubble and all that. It felt very not essential. That's why I'm not covering it. But I guess I'm doing a slight disservice to the story. I felt it was overly too much, but that, you know, your mileage may vary. So there. I'm covering myself. Kevin, you can't attack me for unfairly explaining about the time bubbles and all that stuff.
All right.
So Advent and Time Slip are fighting. And then, you know, they, some kind of feedback loop, temporal feedback, blows up Time's Advent. Kevin, am I explaining this? I don't know that I understand what happened.
Sure, we'll go with that one.
And then a new Sphinx shows up. Hot looking, I got a six-pack abs. Sphinx shows up.
He got the six-pack ab package.
And explains to Time Slip why he couldn't solve this and how this is all connected to past continuity. And it had to be this way. And it's about four pages. Kevin, you want to sum it up for the listener at home?
Yeah, I mean, whenever he went off Sphinx on detailing time and history and how he had to do this thing and then that other thing had to happen, I'm always like, okay. I mean, it's not the...
It doesn't work for me.
It kind of works, so...
I mean, I can see if you're someone who likes the puzzle aspect of it, like, oh, they link this event to that event, to... but it just felt to me every one of these, all these twists seem more plot-driven than story-driven in a way. Yeah. Like her suddenly getting a new power, the weird temporal feedback that just happens. But at the same time, aren't the New Warriors in 2099 also fighting him? But I guess they're fighting him at a different in the future, which is happening at the same time. Like, I know that's the part, or the time travel part, I didn't understand. Like, in the comic, this fight happens after, but does it happen after?
I think you have to be in, like you were saying about interest in a story. Like if I'm hearing about the Darkhold or some Atlantis or something that I'm really into, I'm like, I'm there. Or like the Celestials are coming down and the Eternals are like, oh, and then we evolved man and all that stuff. And I'm hanging on every word. But with this, I'm just like, I'm just going with the flow.
Well, the nice thing is, so the time machine gets blown up in 2099, but our new warriors are going to return to the present through the kinetic dimension, which will distort them and look funny.
Can you do that, Kevin?
You're going to be super happy to hear this, but guess what? Advent and his son, time resets and they're okay. So they didn't have to die. So not only did we save Speedball, we saved some character we don't care about that we met for an issue and a half. So all's well that ends well, I guess. And then that leads us back to them all in the room, Time Slip, in a trance, and all the stuff broken around. And then I'm not sure, I guess, because it's 96, so it's after everyone's come back, right? And after all that?
No.
Okay.
Isn't it going into?
Yeah, I guess. I'm not... The point is, they're all there together except for Speedball. Except when the rest of them crash through the kinetic barrier, they bring Speedball with them. And now the interesting part is his continuity is going to be reset where he doesn't remember anything from the last year or so of issue. You know, because... that Speedball was a fake Speedball. This feels very X. Should have been in the X-Men family, right, Kevin? With, like, clones and people who don't remember. Like, I was replaced by a clone for a year, so I don't remember what happened type of thing. And then the weirdest thing is, it ends with, like, a sitcom laugh. where they're all laughing at, like, that he doesn't, like, they've seen nuclear destructions of New York and all these, but, you know, everything's fine and everybody just laughs at the, that part was the one that really was like, wow, from the nuclear explosion cover, we end with a sitcom laugh crack.
Yeah.
Fun visually. I like it's some cool fights and crazy detail. And like, I didn't, but the word bubbles, I got to be honest, I glazed over some of them.
I think I was more interested and more into this when I read it one after another originally than now. Like, I think back then I was like, oh yeah, this is it's time travel. It's a different take on how to tell a story and everything. And I was more digging that type of thing. But now, not so much. Now I'm more interested in the one issue that was the train wreck that was a Clone Saga.
Yeah. Well, now you're going to have to go look at those Web of Scarlet Spider issues, Kevin, to really get the full grasp of it.
Yeah, I'm going to tune into part 49 of 203.
Yeah, what a weird segment. But this is... Yeah, when they get added, I wouldn't run these issues down, my advice. I mean, when they're on the unlimited, sure, but right as of this recording, I don't think there's a big... If you see them in a quarter bin or something, sure, but I wouldn't go... These will probably set you back a buck or two, maybe up to three or four, and I just don't... And they're fine, but I don't... Wait for the digital unless you absolutely can't, or... Hey, talk to me. I've got at least one dupe I can say. And it was one of my favorite ones of the one, coincidentally enough. I had no way of knowing. Yeah, that's it. So could our next one be our last episode of New Warriors? The series is ending.
Well, if Thunderbolts is any estimation, we won't jump on to the next series.
Wait, there's more New Warriors, Kevin? I ask many like more. Obviously. Oh yeah, if you punch even on the unlimited, they got about a billion of them. So it's fun. We'll see. Maybe we'll find your favorite New Warriors after this one, Kevin. And that way we won't go necessarily chronologically. We can treat the people. Maybe you're like, you know, that 2007 run was the best. Tune in, Marvel News Noise listeners, and I think we might be able to lure Super Steve back in. We'll just tell him we're covering some Bronze Age beauties. What do you say, Kevin?
Oh, that sounds good.
But thanks, everybody. See you later.